So, Christian health assets are sometimes overlooked or excluded from programs that strengthen health systems, train health workers, conduct research, and fund services. And this is in part because governments, donors, and partners lack quality data about the scope, scale, and location of such assets. And the Christian Health Asset Mapping Consortium, quite a mouthful, CHAMC, is a voluntary association of several of the world's largest Christian networks that aims to improve data on Christian health assets, especially in the developing world, including hospitals, clinics, community programs, health worker training programs, supply agencies, and the networks and volunteer agencies that support them. And we've got two speakers today. First, Doug Fountain. Doug is the executive director of Christian Connections for International Health, CCIH, which is a global network of organizations and individuals working in 90 countries to advance health and wholeness. CCIH strengthens local organizations, helps them partner effectively on the global stage, and advocates for their needs with decision makers and funders. Doug's got over 30 years of experience in health services planning, research, and evaluation, including leadership roles with Medical Teams International and the Uganda Christian University. He holds a master's in public administration from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And then Carolyn O'Brien is the program advisor for CCIH. She helps design and monitor programs. Carolyn manages the Christian Health Asset Mapping Consortium, CCIH's 30 by 30 Health Systems Initiative, and CCIH's new consortium on climate resilience. She also coordinates USAID-funded projects in reproductive health, vaccine confidence, and drug supply chains. Carolyn served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Albania. She's got experience studying household air pollution and road safety, and she has an MSPH from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and bachelor's from Kelvin University. So welcome, Doug and Carolyn. I understand that Doug is going to speak to us first for about 15 minutes, and then Carolyn will take over. And then after that, both of them will join us for the Q&A. So please put your questions in at any time. Thanks. Thanks very much. Over to you.
Thanks very much, Peter, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody who's participating with us today. I really want to say thank you to the International Christian Medical and Dental Association for its voice and its leadership and its participation in this effort. And I certainly appreciate the leadership that Dr. Peter Saunders provides. Though, Peter, when you introduced me and you said over 30 years of experience, it made me feel suddenly a little tired. So thank you for the introduction, though. Let's go ahead and proceed today. So we are going to talk about information advocacy, filling gaps in data. And our plan today, go ahead to the next slide. Our plan today is to talk about the background, the why, who, and what of the Christian Health Asset Mapping Consortium. What have we learned from existing data development, and then talk about priorities for near and longer term development, and then leave time for some discussion at the end. First, I want to almost apologize for the fact that sometimes I switch from referring to faith-based to Christian. So we are Christian Connections, and this is the Christian Health Asset Mapping Consortium. However, we find in this modern society, data quality issues are not limited to the Christians working in this space. And as a consortium, we start where we have strength and primary interest, the Christian health landscape, but we know that our ideas and tools have broader purpose with other actors who share commitment to faith-inspired and life-affirming services. So this work should be good for everybody. We work in WHO, USAID, and other donor environments where we refer to faith-based. So please forgive me if I switch between those two words. Okay, why does this matter? Just to set some context, and I've got just three slides to make the point of why this matters for us. First, I think all of us on this webinar know that Christian organizations provide a substantial share of health services, reflecting the ministry of the church, reaching the last mile be that in remote villages or urban slums or marginalized communities. Christian organizations donate medicines, train health workers, respond in emergencies. And then, of course, keeping in mind the nature of ICMDA, mobilizing individuals and deploying health workers who carry their faith into a variety of contexts is also part of what we're good at. Governments, partners, and donors need timely data on Christian services, scope, scale, and nature, basic information to connect for partnerships. And as Peter said in the introduction, a lack of data about those services leads to their undercounting and exclusion from planning, partnerships, and research. We also find when we start talking about Christian health services, people want to use market share data. And you hear statistics like 50% of healthcare is provided by one or another type of faith group. And, or maybe it's 20% or 70%. We think that that type of data is overused and it's frequently confusing. It's usually based on the number of hospitals and overlooks lower level facilities and community-based programs, and is not sensitive to special needs or services in rural or urban areas. I think about an example of fistula repair in Ghana that is a Catholic hospital that is one of the largest providers in West Africa for fistula repair, and it receives government support and there is a great partnership with government, but the facility is a Christian facility, and you reducing it to percent of market share that is Christian overlooks or does not illustrate what the unique capacity is of organizations like that. So those big percent figures are like waving a flag saying we're important too, but cannot drive partnerships, development, or learning. We also think that there are three major emerging issues that underscore the urgency of good data. One is the changing nature of disease profiles, disease burden, and then also the health determinants. So for example, non-communicable disease is on the rise. We will see in our lifetimes decline of malaria and HIV, management of HIV globally. We're also seeing that maternal and under five child survival is increasing. So these are changes that we're seeing. Also, health emergencies are consuming more international assistance. Climate change, humanitarian emergencies, these are going to consume more of the international resources that exist. And finally, systems level drivers, technology and services and data collection, changes in financing such as universal health coverage, all of these point to needing to rethink how governments and partners form alliances, public-private partnerships, and other creative mechanisms to expand services. And the faith sector is an important part of that. Without good data, it's very hard to tell that story and to help engineer those partnerships. Now, the need for good data has been around for a very long time, and we have struggled over years to see good quality information, timely reports come to the fore. And it was very interesting in early 2020, there was a meeting that was called of quite a number of partners at USAID in Washington, D.C. The meeting was in January. Oh my goodness, I put the wrong dates on there. It was January 2020 and March 2020. My mistake on the slide. I wish I could pen over that with a zero. January 2020, a pivotal meeting with partners convened at USAID, the sum of which was this question: when will we get over not having good data? Roll forward just 2 months. In March of 2020, COVID led to emergency emails. We need lists of hospitals that need ventilators, and we need that list right now. So we went from this, somebody has to do something, to now we have an emergency calling for that. And it was seizing that moment when we at CCIH teamed together with quite a number of others And we came together to form what became the Christian Health Asset Mapping Consortium. So launched now, this is correct, January 2022, CHAMC is an association of organizations addressing the urgent need for quality data and information on the Christian health landscape across the globe. And the founding partners are the Africa Christian Health Association's platform, or AHCHOP, the Catholic Health Association of the United States, as the vehicle for organizing and connecting with Catholic ministries throughout the world, then CCIH, the Dalton Foundation, ICMDA, and then the World Council of Churches is that last one. And CCIH's role as secretariat for CHAMC, we volunteered. We stepped up to say we can help with the organizing for this. And CCIH, as Peter introduced us, is a global network of over 110 organizations, hundreds of individuals working in 90 countries. I won't say more about CCIH right now, but that's why you see that I've got the CCIH background and Carolyn does too. So we're the secretariat for this new mapping consortium. We keep referring to the Christian health landscape and the work that we do. What is that landscape? We had to define this, and we worked with the consortium on this to say the landscape is how we refer to organizations and institutions that either directly serve populations or support those that do. So here our emphasis is on the organizations and institutions that directly serve populations or support those that do. And we imagined the landscape looking like this Venn diagram. There are Christian health facilities. Those are the easy ones to count. Christian-owned hospitals, health centers, community outreach programs. Then there are truly community-based programs on the bottom right. These are maybe local NGOs that are doing health education and health promotion in communities. Then there are congregational or other church-run health programs that might take elements of both of the others and provide them through parishes or church structures. In support of those in the Christian health landscape are drug and medical supply organizations, the international support partners, universities and colleges that provide health worker training, and then, of course, the health networks that you see, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, India, Pakistan, a number of other countries where they are forming, that bring together multiple partners under one network umbrella. So that is the Christian health landscape that we are trying to get some better information about. This helps organize our efforts to compile data and advance learning. I want to take a moment and acknowledge, as we talk about organizations and institutions, I want to acknowledge that I'm speaking here with ICMDA. And many members of ICMDA are professionals, Christians working in government or other institutions that may not be working in Christian-owned or Christian-run organizations. That is in a way, it's a different thing. And that's good work that ICMDA leads globally. But our focus for this mapping consortium primarily is on the organizations and institutions. So the three ways that we help out and provide leadership in this space: we compile a registry of databases. That's one. The most common question, or maybe the most common assumption that people make about the mapping consortium, is that we are the data warehouse of all data on tens of thousands of Christian health assets globally. And that is impractical for us to manage ourselves. We needed to start with just knowing who has pieces of that data. I like to use the example of Ghana and the Christian Health Association of Ghana. Ghana has over 300 health facilities and the Christian health facilities. And the Christian Health Association of Ghana has up-to-date information about all of them. It wouldn't make sense for us to keep our own database of Christian health facilities in Ghana if we know that CHAG has got that database. So we keep the registry and of those databases. And that registry is basically a list of databases that includes types of entities, ownership of the data, how it's updated, and is it accessible publicly or privately. The second thing that we do is we share analyses to help decision makers. We provide reports for funders, partners, and policymakers, and you'll hear in a moment about two reports that we did last year. And the third thing that we do is work to improve data quality on Christian health services. We actively participate in WHO mapping working groups. We share resources to improve data quality and foster a learning community. We seek to improve data utilization. There's a lot that's changing in the data architecture and space that we want to make sure that all of our members and global participants are aware of. So those are the three things that we try to do to help out. That really requires that we have a clear understanding of what our audiences are looking for. So we tend to think in terms of policymakers, donors, church organizations, partners, and then researchers, all of whom have a different need for information. And we try to think, what do each of those need at different times? And we consult frequently with counterparts or leaders in all five of those types of audiences to better understand what they really need. Now, I'm going to stop there. I've given the background of why we exist and how we're set up and structured. At this point, Carolyn is going to take us forward and illustrate a little bit of how we've actually been doing that. So Carolyn, over to you.
Thanks, Doug, for that orientation and background on how we started CHAMC. I have the pleasure of sharing some of the initiatives that we've already taken on in the first couple of years after launching in January 2022, and then share where we're headed in the future. It would be a big miss for us to have to host a webinar like this and speak here and not share new data. What we CHAMC really prioritizes sharing summary level data. That's one of our major goals and something we orient ourselves around. So I'm really happy to be able to share some of that data with you today and our plans for sharing more data in the future. To advance our understanding of the complex and dynamic Christian health landscape, we try to share routine data every year and update it as we can. So every brief that we put out, we kind of frame it as more of a snapshot. We make sure there's a date on it. We know that it's dynamic and moving, and there's lots of changes in these health assets every day. And so this first one I have up here is a snapshot of Christian health networks in sub-Saharan Africa. And so this is actually an updated snapshot from what we did in 2022, which includes 22 Christian health networks in 17 countries. And several of those health networks are members of AUCHOP, who Doug mentioned before is one of the founding partners of CHAMC, but there are others that are not that we added into this snapshot that we published in May 2023. And so that covers 17 countries. You'll see the geographical spread was pretty good in this sample. So 3 in Central Africa, 4 in East Africa, 4 in South Africa, and 7 in West Africa. And looking across those 22 Christian health networks, we see the big number that's circled here. We found 8,355 health assets. And then the breakdown is between types of health assets. So hospitals, district hospitals, health centers, dispensaries, community-based health programs, training institutions, and drug supply organizations. We really focus on assets as a broad term because we know there's more that goes on in terms of health service and health care in the landscape besides what goes on at hospitals and traditional health facilities. So it's nice to see that breakdown, and that's something that information that we make sure to collect through our registry as well. I also wanted to make a note here that some countries include two or more Christian health networks, which makes this a bit complicated to collect this data as well. They're often owned or affiliated with a specific denomination or religious institution, but most of the reporting networks for this brief and snapshot are ecumenical. For example, Uganda and Kenya have separate Protestant and Catholic networks, while other countries like Tanzania and Ghana unify them under a single organization. So this is another data brief that we published this year in June 2023. CHAMCSI undertook an analysis of the 2019 World Health Organization's Global Health Facilities Database and compared the results with externally verifiable data sources. For this, we used a sample of CHA, Christian Health Association data to compare with, and identify areas of consistency or gaps in the data and use that to recommend ways to improve upon global data strategies. So we really wanted to take a look and see what's missing here. How can we strengthen this? WHO has a new initiative for compiling country or national level health facility data lists that's up and coming, and CHAMCSI has been speaking into that process and trying to highlight the good work of the faith-based sector there as well. But it was important for us to take a look at previous data sets that have been collected and what we can see there. So this data set was huge. It included over 98,000 health facilities in 50 African countries. And of those 98 health facilities, only 3,600, about 3,600 were tagged or had the identification as FBO owned. And that was only in 22 of the 50 African countries, which means that there were none, however, in 28 countries, including Uganda, Cameroon, and Liberia, where we know that FBOs own and operate health facilities. And so we think that some facilities may be entirely missing from the list, while others may not be classified as FBO owned in their source data. It gets very complicated, and I saw a question in the Q&A already come in about what about an ex-mission hospital that now is government run or government staffed? How would they identify? Where are we marking them? What list do they get put on? That question becomes very complicated because there is a lot of overlap, and the structure, dynamic models, and frameworks for public-private partnership are quite dynamic. And so we wanted to make that clear as a caveat for this as well, is there's a lot of facilities and hospitals that have a mixture of both either faith-based history, or there is a faith-based structure, they're connected to a church network, but are staffed or have some other connection to government sources. So we are doing some work now to kind of think about what those private partnership models might be to help the global audience understand better where FBOs fit into that, so they're not completely left off the table, and there is some good data and counting of the faith-based facilities there. And so improving representation and inclusion of those faith-owned facilities and data actually does work to strengthen national and global efforts to plan, support, and enhance the accountability of health systems. And that was really our guiding purpose for this analysis and this brief. All right, so what are we doing this year? What have we been up to and preparing for? We're very excited that we'll be able to launch our virtual hub or data set registry sometime in the very near future. And Doug mentioned in the background and explaining the goals for this consortium, this is a major initiative that we really orient ourselves around is having this central data set registry. And again, it is not a data warehouse. We're not keeping data sets with specifics about certain hospitals or health facilities or community health programs, but we aim to provide a good a better understanding and a good snapshot of what types of health assets out there, country by country, what does the Christian health landscape look like? And so this is on this slide is just a screenshot of what we're looking to, what one would fill out if you were to submit a registry entry into the virtual hub. That hub will also include resources on mapping. All the briefs that we have published will be stored there as well. There'll be opportunities to connect with the consortium. We have a listserv or Google group that people who are interested in this work, you can join, and that's the first place where we share data briefs and updates about the consortium. So there's all that information will be on the hub, and we hope to circulate that soon. All right, and the next thing we're working on is our faith-based community health program inventory. As I mentioned, even when we were talking about our Sub-Saharan Africa data brief and looking through the different types of health assets, we know that FBOs deliver a substantial amount of healthcare through community health programs, although they are often not included in quantification of health services. Oftentimes these national lists are really facility and hospital based and leave off those important assets that serve a huge chunk of the community through specific ways. So we've put in some time to do research on different FBOs who run faith-based community health programs. The top, I will say this is also just a snapshot because we are building this list as we speak. And so right now we have a list of about 40 FBOs running over 200 faith-based community health programs and some descriptive information on those, which allowed us to categorize and figure out, okay, now we have a snapshot of 200 faith-based community health programs. What can we learn from that? How can we divide that up or make sense of all of these community health programs and how they benefit the community? So we've been able to come up with some categorizations for those. One is by focus area, and you can see on the slide, we have 11 different focus areas that we have divided those 200 community health programs up in. And then the second is approaches. What approach do FBOs take to community health programs? And so we really saw four major approaches through that: education, health worker visits, campaigns, and outreach. So that this will be a data brief coming soon in 2024. Keep your eyes out for this. But it'll be a great snapshot even to see the different types of community health programs for small versus large FBOs, rural versus urban, clinic versus large hospital, faith leader led versus clinician led, and across multiple countries. And the last priority I'll touch on is everything I've really mentioned up until this point has been very Africa centric, and we recognize that, and we know we need to expand and do a better job of capturing other regions and what Christian health assets exist there as well. So we are looking at mapping Christian health assets in Asia this year. We are really trying to advance a supportive data infrastructure in Asia. It was a bit easier, more low-hanging fruit to start in Sub-Saharan Africa because AACHOP is such a large network. We have good access to the Christian health associations and their data. It's a bit more complicated, more complex, and more dynamic in Asia because Christianity is the minority religion in many countries as well. And so there's extra sensitivities there as well. So we'll be, along with this effort, we'll be convening key stakeholders and really hearing from them about what their mapping goals are, being more connected with other networks would benefit them, and making sure to hear out those sensitivities on mapping there. And again, looking at this priority, we return to the idea that a lack of data on this type of work, the Christian health landscape, it undermines planning and partnership. And we are really trying to address that with the work of CHAMC. So that is a snapshot of what we've been up to and what we're looking forward to doing in this upcoming year. I'm really happy to hear any questions about that as we head into discussion. I'll hand it over to Doug. Thanks.
Thank you, Carolyn. Really appreciate that. And you touched on all of the key things that we're starting to learn from this. And I'm seeing excellent questions come up. And Peter, I know you're going to lead us through that. I'll just make one observation as we prepare for discussion time. This is a rolling ball. If we had set out to say, here's our methodology, here's the perfect data. You know, here's what we know in the world, and we declare victory that we've accumulated that knowledge. That would be something. I think that would be remarkable to do that. Carolyn made a really important point at the start. This is a rolling process. We are learning, we're gathering insights. So some of these dynamics, you know, how do we want to count facilities that were Christian and now are, you know, now are owned by the government, but there's still some Christian involvement? Or what do you call a Christian organization that is three quarters funded by the government? Is that still a Christian facility? These are dynamic questions that we still have to work through. So thank you. Looking forward to the discussion. These were three, we just set up some reflection questions. How does this information help local organizations form stronger partnerships? Again, that's one of the driving forces for this. How does this support your work and your context? And thinking about all of the parts of your health system, which do you feel that you know the least about? Now, those were our reflection questions, but already there's a lot here in the Q&A. So I'm going to turn it over to Peter now to lead us through for the discussion.
Yes, please. Thanks very much, Doug and Carolyn. So I've been listening to Doug and Carolyn from CCIH, Christian Connections and International Health. We've now got a time of Q&A, and I can see questions coming in. Please keep putting those through the Q&A. Just first question, Doug, how do you go about collecting this data? I know you're going to collect a lot through the website, but what was your strategy initially to discover all this data, and how willing were people to release it to you? You just talk us through that.
The two leading things that we have were the Christian Health Associations from Sub-Saharan Africa and then the WHO data. So I'll start with the Christian Health Associations. In those cases, AHCHOP was a member, and we worked with them directly to go through and they, all of the national health associations in Sub-Saharan Africa are part of AHCHOP, and they simply rolled up the data and offered it to us. In most of those cases, we also triangulated back to the websites for the Christian Health Associations, and in a few cases, actually got on and connected with people just to make sure that we had up-to-date information. When you're dealing at a systems level or with a multi-facility network, it's not difficult to get counts of things. And fortunately, the framework that we shared, the Carolyn had that summary table with the types of hospitals and health centers, et cetera, was already in existence. And that, because that existed, that was comparatively easy then for us to almost make a standard. There were gaps, and we then had to reach out. You know, we would hear that there was, if we had partial information from one network, then we would just go look up for others. Carolyn, I'll talk about WHO data, but what else do you want to say about that process?
Yeah, I think it's been difficult to get information via email. So I do think we had a good amount of triangulation between websites and what previously had been collected by AHCHOP and IMA, World Health. But we also I had another data source through the Catholic Health Association as well too. So we're trying to look
Right.
at as many data sources as we can, and then Doug and I were just mentioning this yesterday. There's nothing that motivates people like seeing a list and seeing that you're not on that list. And so our first iteration did miss a few networks, and we were able to collect that data because we also heard from people, hey, I have this network in this country. Make sure I'm on the next iteration of this list. And we're very happy to hear those things as well.
Or the data was old. You know, the number that got
Yeah.
circulated was an old number, and somebody says that's not right. Terrific. Then send us the new number. So this is where the registry is going to be helpful, because then we can direct people to a place where they can put in something to keep it up to date. The WHO data, the master facility list file, is a publicly accessible file. The hard thing is figuring out how to analyze it. And so we actually did that. And I'll just mention one of the questions that came up in here is about that 3,680 facilities. That is a woefully small number. And
Yeah.
but that is because of the tag that WHO database used, that comes from the ministries of health, that either, I can put it this way, they either correctly identified faith-based facilities as faith-based, or they lumped them into private nonprofit, or they might have even counted them as public if they have a lot of public resources going to them. So you couldn't differentiate clearly if just because it's coded as public or private nonprofit doesn't mean that it's not faith-based. So this is where we have to keep working at improving data quality at the national levels for that.
I noticed the WHO data was for 50 countries, of which they said 22 were faith-based, but they missed out countries like Uganda and Liberia. You looked at data from 17 countries, but overall you had more than twice the number of Christian or faith-based facilities. So that tells us quite a lot. But in the other 28 countries where WHO found none, we know with the exception of Uganda and Liberia, and that there was one other, were there, are we to believe that the other countries are places without a significant Christian health presence, or have they just not been counted? What sort of countries are we talking about there?
Well, so I think, you know, Carolyn mentioned Uganda, Liberia, Cameroon, are three that, according to this, the analysis of the data set, have no faith-based facilities. That is either because, and Carolyn nailed it right when she said it, is either because they are coded as something else, like they're coded as private nonprofit or as public, or they might be missing entirely. And we don't know in some of those cases. But it's true. If we say we know that the truth is here, and the analysis of the database shows this here, then, and this is the one that everybody's using for system planning, then we have a gap to make up. And that's the thing that we have to do, is raise the quality of the data and make sure that we're advocating for tools so that we can get accurate measurements and reflect the true nature of the health system for WHO. That's a whole other discussion as to how we do
Yeah.
that.
Doug, a huge amount has been achieved already. There's a lot more to go. There's one question here. Do you have the resources necessary to complete the work and maintain the effort? How have you managed to sustain it so far on top of everything else that you're doing at CCIH?
Thank you for the question. I can directly say that we have a we've had to raise our own internal resources and find partners to help us just with the little bit of funding. But we have some gaps. The things that we hope to be able to do, we can't do without additional support. There was a question that came, or let me back up. We started with Africa because, as Carolyn said, it was an easy place to start. moving to Asia and starting the discussion, convening leaders, starting to see what data availability is, that takes resources. So we went out and found a small grant to help us be able to start that process. We have right now no funding that's able to help us get a start on Latin America. I know that was one of the questions. But at least we're moving where we can now with the resources that we've got. The effort on community based services that Carolyn identified, that's been because we have a star intern and we have dedicated some staff time to support that. So we need the consortium and we need other people to join in with us to pull this along.
Yeah. And you've answered the question about Latin America already, that resources allowing, you'll be moving on to that in time after Asia as well.
Absolutely.
Can you give us a kind of overview of how much of the health services in Africa, Asia, Latin America are supplied by Christian Health Assets? I know you've said percentages are misleading, but some kind of rough overview. How significant are they in these places?
Yeah, I can. Carolyn, do you want to start with any of that, or should I take that
Go
and then?
ahead, you can take that.
I'll start with the data that was published in 2015 in the Lancet journals, in the Lancet that summarized, published in 2015. So the data was more from around 2010, 2011. Those are the data that people frequently use to talk about the range is 20 to 70% of healthcare is delivered by faith-based organizations. And people liked that because it's a simple way to summarize. But it becomes really problematic when you go look at a rural area in many sub-Saharan Africa countries, and you look at who's serving a rural catchment area. There might be only one hospital, and that happens to be a Christian hospital. So you could say 50% of health services in the country are delivered by faith-based, but if you are that one rural person, you only have one choice. And so it gets difficult to summarize that. It also breaks down because most people talk about hospitals, and yet, as Carolyn showed, the majority of the healthcare is actually community, is lower level health centers and community-based health centers. And we really do not have a good estimate right now of public-owned facilities to do that comparison. It's easier to get public-owned hospitals versus faith-based hospitals. It's harder to get right now the public-owned community level and faith-based community level. So it's misleading to use these sort of percents. Maybe the last example that I'll use of why I don't like using those stats. One of our colleagues on the mapping consortium with World Council of Churches, Mwai Makoka, talks about when he was in Malawi, there was one health center that specialized in serving people who are hearing impaired, serving a deaf population in Malawi. It happened to be the Christian hospital. It could have been the government hospital, but it happened to be the Christian hospital. So if you're a deaf person in Malawi, the only option you have is the Christian hospital. So when we roll things up as a percent, we mask or undervalue the unique contributions sometimes that faith makes. But it's still, every so often I still find myself saying, oh, 40, 50, 60% of healthcare is delivered in a particular context, simply because it's easy to use a number like that. It's sort of like here's my parallel. Pulling a scripture out of context and using, what they call proof texting, that's like proof texting the data. It's convenient to pull the words out because they serve your purpose, but it doesn't really it's not really appropriate to do it that way.
Now, when it came to Africa, you said that the CHAs, the Christian Healthcare Associations or Christian Hospital Associations in various African countries, were incredibly helpful because they had ready databases already, and they were very cooperative with you. Can you give us an idea of how many African countries have national Christian health associations like that? And then with regard to Asia, how similar or different is the situation there, and how will that affect the way you go about collecting data in Asia?
I can take this one if you want, Doug.
Great,
Please
terrific.
do, Carolyn. Yeah.
So for Achop, they are an association with 40 networks in 32 countries. And so we only have even a sample of Achop's network, but it is so extensive. So we're hoping our focus this year is Asia, but I'm sure we'll do updated snapshots of sub-Saharan Africa and build on to the additional CHAs. And adding to that as well, there are some CHAs in formation. So that number is also dynamic. Right now, it's 40 networks in 32 countries, but that is also growing and changing. And so having an association like that is so helpful because of having a collection of contacts, having them as a founding partner of the CHAMC, also helpful because we have that inside connection as well. For Asia, there is not something similar. So there are Christian health associations in Asia. India and Pakistan are two examples of those, and we are well connected with them. But in some of the other countries, there's not that same type of organization. And so that's what we're really hoping to do a deeper dive on this year. Because it is, and I'm seeing in the chat, Nepal as well has one. That's helpful information. Thank you. So we are taking a deeper dive into that for this upcoming year.
Yeah,
If we
it's also dynamic, if I can say, because just in sub-Saharan Africa, where there are Christian health associations, not all of the associations have robust data sets. Some of them have a number of facilities, but what do we know about the health facilities, or what level of data is available about them varies. But the countries that don't have national health associations, Christian health associations, maybe in the process of forming something. So countries like Madagascar or Angola or South Sudan, there's been work in trying to set things moving in South Sudan. You can expect to see some growth in those. Otherwise, we count sometimes on the church networks. And if the Lutheran Church or the Pentecostal Church has a grouping, then we can go to that grouping and try to learn what they've got within that grouping.
thanks. Can we talk a bit about the practical applications of this? There'll be some people asking, okay, this is great, but why? And you've mentioned already the importance of this data to training, to advocacy, to research, to provision of drugs and consumables to where they're needed, and so on. Can you just talk us through some of the ways that you could see Christian actors using this data in the future, and perhaps give us some examples of how knowing the data has helped to improve research, advocacy, provision, and so on. Thanks.
Carolyn, do you want me to get a start going on that and you come in, or do you have something?
I would just add to the list that you had, Peter, of the ways that we can use it is also pandemic preparedness, emergency preparedness. Having this here, it was a clear gap during COVID. I mean, part of what got this idea started was just the emergency request for data. So this is a really important piece of preparing for what's next. And we know with climate crisis, there is an increasing amount of emergencies in the future. And so just adding to that list of that's one very practical application for this updated and quality data. And over to you, Doug.
The other day, I was asked the question, how many mission-backed health institutions are there in, I think the context was Africa, or maybe the context was even the world. And that's a very difficult question to answer, because the way that we look at it, we say if somebody identifies as Christian, They may or may not be backed by missions. And this was an international organization trying to figure out who are the mission hospitals, the mission healthcare that are provided. Well, what do you mean by that? Is it the ones where there's partnerships from overseas agencies to send missionaries? Is that what's referred to? Or is it, anything that is Christian? Because often people don't, if they think about the mission connections, they think about something that is perhaps much smaller than the total Christian-owned health sector. I use the example of Kenya. If you talk to people about how many Christian or mission hospitals they are, people can list off maybe half a dozen, but there are in fact hundreds. And if you add up all of the Christian facilities at all different levels, there's nearly 1,000 facilities. And it just doesn't make the count. So advocacy for missions-minded people is one. We are right now doing a project for USAID on primary health care. I think the world is starting to pay attention now, more than in quite some years, to the needs for primary health care. But the focus up to now has all been on public sector resources. They're thinking, how do we equip, fund, and support public-run primary health care? And we raised our hand and said, kindly allow us to do a profile of the faith-based contribution to primary health care, which is enormous. So we'll use the data that we've gathered here to help illustrate the point, and then we'll go deeper and describe what that looks like. So that's a very tangible example of how advocacy will matter. At the national level, I really do hope to see local health system authorities and experts come together and use the data to advocate for their needs. Often, if the government is doing a training program in an area, they might, maybe it's training on management of childhood illness in a region of a country. They might think about reaching the public sector facilities. But if the local health system authorities, the district health officers, have reminders in front of them frequently of what the value is and what the need is of training the faith-based partners as well, they will hopefully not overlook them when they go to make sure the trainers are getting out to those facilities. So this data helps set the context at the national, regional, and increasingly local level. It should embolden people on this call to go into those offices and say, let's make sure that we are not leaving out important parts of the health system.
What's been the reaction from non-faith-based organizations? I'm talking thinking about the WHO, obviously, and all its associated movements, big secular NGOs, national governments. Have you found that this research has sparked interest and created possibilities for, co-belligerent partnerships and so on?
I'll speak from my experience. Overwhelmingly, yes, there's been a positive reception. The providing concrete information about the scope, scale, and location of faith-based assets really, people refer to it with language like, well, that's an eye-opener, or you've helped me become aware of something that didn't exist. In the WHO world, it's very interesting. And one major piece of advice that we received last year went like this. We thought we should elevate and make sure everybody knows about the importance of faith-based. So we wanted to wave the flag of faith-based partners. And somebody advised that we take a different look at it and think about from the government angle. If you're a government partner or a government organization, Ministry of Health, you don't just go looking for faith-based because it's faith-based. You're looking to figure out how to use your resources effectively to achieve the best possible outcomes. And that might mean forming public-private partnerships. And that language is now coming out more clearly, language like whole of society planning, or you see the trend towards localization and local decision-making with whole of society planning and inclusion. Now governments are starting to say, what new partnerships can we create? And that might mean leveraging the private nonprofit and faith-based partners. It might mean leveraging corporate partners. But if you take that lens and say, we want to make sure that for public-private partnerships, people have good access to data, then it can help, as opposed to simply pounding our fists saying, but you're undercounting the faith-based.
Sure.
I would also add, oh, sorry, Peter.
No, please go on.
I'm conscious we are at time as well. So just a couple of thoughts adding to that. Even without the data, the important data that we're bringing to the table, CHAMC helps tell the simple story of how is the Christian landscape set up, which is a starting place for a lot of the audiences and the the secular audiences that we're connecting with. And so even having that Venn diagram graphic of the Christian health landscape is an important starting point to those connections, to building that understanding, and really focusing on not just look at us, we're the Christian health, we have all these facilities, but we're here to work with and strengthen the total health system, as Doug was mentioning. So really focusing on that collaboration partnership piece.
And we are just about out of time. I wanted just to ask one last question, and that's, is there any danger in data collection from hostile actors? Well, one can imagine that some countries don't take kindly to Christian initiatives, even Christian health initiatives, and there might be certain rulers who would just love to have a list of people to round up or collect or whatever. You know, how does one guard against the hostile responses?
Carolyn, would you like to start with that, or should I?
Go ahead.
One of the most embarrassing moments in my life was when I was speaking with somebody in South Sudan, what was then Southern Sudan, years ago, when the active civil war was raging, and I asked, what is the relationship for your church hospital with the government? And his response is, well, the government bombs our hospital. And I thought, this was before I became involved in what I'm involved in now, and I felt horribly naive. Now, roll forward, I have a little different view about all of that. There are people who would target, and we hear about this, there are people that would target Christian assets just because they're Christian. They tend to be known locally, though. I don't know that people go looking for some list on a website from some international organization to find out, you know, oh, that's a Christian hospital in this town. They already know that. They can pull it up. Somebody complained about, you know, putting GPS coordinates. There was a question in here about using geo data, and there was a concern about making that data available. You can go on Google Maps to any place on the planet Earth and get the exact coordinates. If you know that there's a hospital that you want to target, it's already available. There are many places to turn for that. So people are not looking for this, you know, this data to help target. But we should not be naive about the fact that there are people who vehemently disagree over religious purposes. And summary statistics can be used against groups that are, you know, that as part of an overall level of persecution, to be frank. I am concerned about that. And so what do you do?
Yeah. Well, it's never stopped Christians in the last 20 centuries, has it, doing their good works? And I think we press on courageously because we know who's really on the throne, don't we? But thank you so much, and both Doug and Carolyn, for all the great work you're doing, for your presentation today, for enlightening us, really, as you say, being a real eye-opener to what God is doing in places we don't know. We kind of imagine that some of us, that everything happening Christian in healthcare in the developing world is because of Western missions. And as you say, the overwhelming majority is not connected with any mission society at all. There's a huge amount going on. Thanks to you both for coming. Thanks to all of you for coming along and listening and participating with your questions. So we look forward to seeing you all soon on ICMDA webinars. May God bless you.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you,
Thank
Peter.
you.